You're listening to the Monica Cade Podcast, a conscious approach to all things health and lifestyle, empowering you to be your best self in each moment. Because the truth is, that's all we ever have. From conscious lifestyle tips that'll help you make better choices in all areas of your life, through to interviews with game-changing entrepreneurs, creative minds, and thought leaders. These conversations move me. They're changing the world, and I hope they impact yours. So, without further ado, let's dive into this week's conversation.
Hello and welcome to episode 108 of the Monica Cade Podcast. Today, my guest is Dr. Carolyn Ross, who is an integrative doctor specializing in eating disorders and addictions. She's one of Denver's top eating disorder specialists. She's authored two books and recently she launched the Anchor Program, a proven medically supervised program that treats compulsive overeating, emotional eating, and binge eating disorders. Carolyn is also a dear friend and she's interviewed me a few times for her own podcasts, but today we're going to hear about her story and the brilliant work she's doing through the Anchor Program. Hello, Carolyn. How are you today?
I'm great, Monica. Thanks for having me on your podcast. I have to just let you know that I now live in San Diego, no longer in Denver.
Now you will have to expand your reach and become one of San Diego's finest.
I'm working on it.
Awesome. Well, I thought we could backtrack because I think you have a really interesting story in terms of your career. And I wanted to, as a child, you knew you wanted to be a doctor. And I thought that's fascinating because it's not that often you come across people these days where what they wanted to do as a child is something that they've come to do as an adult. So I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about your upbringing and when was that moment that you decided as a child that you wanted to become a doctor?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Texas and we lived not maybe an hour and a half away from my grandparents. And I'm the oldest of five children. Mm-hmm. And so often going to my grandmother's house was my escape. Mm-hmm. But my grandfather was a doctor in a small town in Texas, so a country doctor. And during the day, during the weekdays, we would all end up at his office. And he would give us things to do, like counting out medicines or, mm-hmm. you know, practice giving shots on oranges and all of that. And my grandmother was also a nurse. So I grew up kind of in that medical arena. And around 9 years old, I was just really, really clear that that's what I wanted to do. Now, it's not to say I didn't fight it because I went to college and I struggled with organic chemistry, as many people do. And I decided, forget about it. I'm not going to be a doctor because I can't get through organic chemistry. And instead, I changed my major to foreign languages, which was another love of mine. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I did come back to medicine, and that's where I've stayed.
That's awesome. When you were growing up, was your family really supportive? Like, did they encourage you to go down that path, or did they also give you that space to explore what you might want to do before you kind of realized that that was the path you wanted to take?
I don't think I told anybody but my grandmother. So I don't, you know, I do know that my father had wanted to go to medical school mm-hmm. at one point and he decided not to. There's a whole family lore around that, like him being in surgery with my grandfather and passing out. And he decided, you know, at the sight of blood passing out, and he decided, oh, I guess this isn't for me. But there was always that regret in his heart about it. And I think he would have been a great doctor. But I don't think I really shared it with a lot of people. It was kind of just something I talked with my grandmother about.
Yeah. Did you ever, because obviously studying medicine it's a pretty challenging industry. And, you know, I can relate in terms of the chemistry side of things because I did a little bit of a nutrition degree and I got to the chemistry part and I was just like, oh my goodness.
I know it kills a lot of careers, chemistry does.
It does. It was just, you know, the beginning started out all right and then it kind of, and I was like, why can my brain not get this? I'm like, Monica, there are so many other people that get through this, surely you can, but don't think it was my path.
The people who get through it are either chemists or they just go through with at the skin of their teeth, get through it. And that's how I eventually made it through. I never really learned to enjoy chemistry ever.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that, you know, you can still make it through by the skin of your teeth. So then you also went down the path of integrative medicine. What kind of changed your trajectory there?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a real change. Again, this goes back to my family. My grandfather himself was the oldest of eight children, and his mother was apparently a Native American medicine woman. And when he went to medical school, they used to fight about, like, whether modern, quote unquote, modern medicine was better or whether herbal medicine was better. And oftentimes he would confer with her about difficult cases that he had. And he never told his patients. He would just, you know, kind of talk to her on the side, and then he would decide what to do. So, you know, I kind of grew up, I didn't know her. She was gone by the time I was born, but I did grow up with that legend about her. And it just always felt to me that there was more that I could offer my patients than just what I learned in medical school. And I think early in my practice in particular, I really began to see that, just like your interest in nutrition, I began to see that most of the problems I was seeing in my office were really related to lifestyle. And now everybody's talking about lifestyle medicine, right? But back then, no one was talking about it. But I just kept seeing, like, well, I'm in the emergency room. You know, someone comes in with a migraine and you talk to them, and they come in every month with the same migraine at the same time of month. And, you know, they had a fight with their husband about the bills or some other stressful event occurred. Or, you know, you see all of the diseases related to poor eating habits or lack of exercise and so on. So early in my career, I was really more drawn towards behavioral medicine and, like, how can I really help my patients change their behaviors? And that became, you know, a real fascination for me. And I like to say that early in my career, I had this overriding question that just, it was sort of like a mantra in a way. It was kind of something I thought about and pondered on a regular basis. And that is, what does it take to heal? And for me, when I saw the limitations of my training of Western medicine, I mean, we weren't even trained to talk to people and get their stories or to identify lifestyle factors. So when I started really talking to my patients and hearing what they had to say, the light bulbs kept going off, you know, and I just realized that healing was much, much bigger than what I had learned. And then finally, I think the thing that really solidified that for me is in 2000, I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And I was unable to work, completely unable. I could barely get out of bed to get my son off to school and to cook for him and all of that stuff. And I kept going to my regular doctor and saying, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? But back then, it was a very new condition and nobody knew what to make of it. And I think a lot of them thought I was just, like, stressed out, you know? And I really wasn't. I was really sick. I had fevers, you know, I had these recurrent infections, sinus infections, and just overwhelming fatigue and brain fog. I couldn't think. So I couldn't be a doctor if I couldn't think and remember stuff. So I didn't practice for two whole years.
Wow, that's huge.
That was huge. Like, the first part was my identity. Was so wrapped up in, you know, being a helper and being a doctor and hearing people say to me every day, like, Dr. Ross, Dr. Ross. I didn't hear that for two whole years. And so I began then my own search for healing. And it was, it took me to places I've never been before or never taken my patients to. I went to shamans. I did Native American, you know, sweat lodges. I took herbs. I saw acupuncturists, chiropractors. I did Phoenix Rising yoga. I did a lot of emotional work. I did everything I could put my hands on because I was so desperate to get well, you know. And over a couple of years' time, I began to see that what I was doing was having a benefit. And that's when I decided to really focus on this. And I did the fellowship with Andrew Weil and in Tucson for 2 years. Mm. And during that time, I continued my own process of healing and just really became convinced that there was more to medicine than just, you know, Western medicine.
Do you feel like that experience with your health, you know, it's easy to kind of look at a situation in retrospect and kind of apply meaning to it, but do you think you had that experience so it kind of changed the trajectory and shifted you to maybe become more open to that approach in your practice?
I think I was already open because I was already exploring.
Yeah.
But I think that experience really solidified it for me. Mm-hmm. Before, it was kind of more like a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll try this, we'll try that, you know. Yeah. But then it became more of a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed, like I was working after that fellowship, I started working in a treatment center for eating disorders and addictions. And I put everything to work from what I learned in treating eating disorders and addictions. And then I started speaking and writing books about that whole approach. So it became really like clear to me that people need to know about this.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So then tell me, what did you fall in love with, if you can say it that way, about the aspect around eating disordered or, you know, food related behaviors?
I don't know if you'll understand this, but I fell in love with the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that it involved body, mind, spirit, you know, physiology, psychology. I thought it was the most fascinating thing that I've ever really worked with. Mm. I had been a medical director before that in an eating disorder facility, but at that point I was still doing the Western medicine approach. And it was just so powerful to see people with severe eating disorders responding to, you know, acupuncture and chiropractic and, you know, energy healing, as well as therapy and medical care and so on. So that was just, you know, it was kind of like the biggest test
of
philosophy, you know, to treat someone who's a severe anorexic.
Yeah.
And use this combined, you know, therapies. That was really a testament to be able to say to people, you know, I'm doing this and it's really working. People are getting well.
Mm. Yeah, I can see how you love it in that sense because of the complexity. Because as well, you mentioned earlier in our conversation how you liked the behavioral components of what you were doing. And in eating disorders, having gone through one myself, there are so many layers and it is very connected mind, body, spirit. And I think what you're saying, if I relate it to my own experience, that's how I kind of got through mine. I had to go inward and explore the different layers within myself to kind of go, okay, well, this is my mind, this is my body, how disconnected am I from my body? And, you know, it just exploring all those facets. So it's really cool that, and so supportive to those people that you've helped to treat as well, because it's such a all-consuming type of addiction disorder. So I think...
And there's so much stigma and it's so regimented in the medical profession that you're supposed to do, you know, this, this, and this. You give them these drugs, you know, you force feed them, you do all of these things. And it's, you know, and that's the conventional wisdom. And I was able to move that conventional wisdom in a different direction, at least with the clients that I was seeing. So.
Mm. I don't know if you know, but across that industry, do they still practice it in the same conventional way? I know some places would be obviously shifted, but is it still run that way?
Pretty much. You know, there's a lot of talk about quote-unquote integrative therapies, but they generally mean more psychological therapeutic approaches. Mm. When they talk about including alternative therapies, it mainly ends up being a yoga class or maybe mindfulness, which is good. So meditation or mindfulness, mindful eating, that's a common way. But the way that I was able to practice at that first treatment center, you know, as I'm saying, like, I can tell you a quick story of a guy I saw who was severely anorexic. He had restricted his dietary intake to, I don't know, something like 4 Kit Kats a day. You know, he was eating almost nothing. Mm. And because of that, he had lost muscle strength along his spine, and his spine had started to collapse. And so he was like 6 feet tall, but he had lost 4 inches of height. Mm. Which, you know, that's severe. And he was in a wheelchair, you know? So through the use of, in his case, it was chiropractic care that shockingly helped him regain, you know, along with the other stuff, but shockingly helped him regain 2 inches of his height and get him back to walking again. And that's something that would, you know, it theoretically is blasphemous in Western medicine to, you know, use chiropractic for a severe anorexic. So I also did a lot of testing where I could show people that they had come in with severe depression or, severe anxiety, for example, and then they would go through our program and then we test them at the end and we would see, even without medication, but with nutrition and energy healing and therapy and all of those things. So we worked together hand in glove with the alternative providers. We did staffings with them. We discussed patients with them. We listened to their ideas. They listened to ours. And I don't think that happens anywhere that I've ever seen since that time.
I find it so bizarre, especially now, you know, with the world changing as it is, you know, and people are more open to, you know, different ways of healing and blending the two modalities. I just find it really strange that it's not more widely recognized and more widely used. It really blows my mind.
Well, I think, you know, research lags behind practice almost always. And there's there's a lot of politics in medicine. So the thing that makes you money is the thing that, you know, most of the time is approved out of medicine. And, you know, alternative providers, it's a different ball game. So I don't know why it hasn't changed. I certainly feel that, you know, after, I don't know, I started doing this in 2004. So 15 years I've been singing this same song. I think I've done my part to try to help people understand. I've written about it. You know, I've done a small amount of research on my own. I've spoken on numerous occasions about just this kind of thing. And I think there is a dawning understanding, but it's slow. And they say it takes 17 years to change anything in medicine.
Wow.
So maybe I'm getting close. It's been 15.
There you go. So I'll have to make a note in my calendar to touch base with you in 2 years. And we'll be like, what happened? Tell me.
Isn't that amazing?
Now you've created the Anchor program.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. So tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, I want to tell you about why I created it, because what happened is all these years since that first time in 2004, I've been working in different treatment centers or consulting for treatment centers, building programs, et cetera. And what I kept seeing over and over is people, you know, because it's different here. We don't have universal health care. Mm-hmm. I saw parents mortgaging their homes to save their children. You know, I saw people going bankrupt trying to keep paying for treatment because, you know, these are difficult conditions to treat. And the last time I worked in a treatment center, you know, I had that same feeling again of like, there's got to be a better way. This is wrong that people are not getting the care they need. So I started thinking, like, what could we do differently? What could I do differently? Because I'm not going to change the whole system. And I realized that doing the work online without all of the props of having an office and, you know, all of that overhead, that would reduce my expenses. So then it would reduce what I would have to charge other people. And I also thought that for people struggling with, particularly people living in larger bodies, struggling with eating disorders, it's often very frightful for them to go to a physician office, you know, because of the weight stigma in the medical profession, which is real. And so my feeling was, you know, offer people really, really expert care, not just, you know, somebody who's been through a weight loss program at Weight Watchers and then tells you how to use that plan. But this is, you know, people like myself with extensive experience, therapists who are specialists in eating disorder, nutritionists who are also specialists in eating disorders. And we're all working together as a team and offering these groups and individual sessions online. And it's, you know, it's taken a while to, for me to learn how to market myself online and do all that business part. But in terms of working with the clients, it's been so exciting, so exciting. I mean, the kind of results we're getting, the groups are bonding. We have a 12-week intensive program. And then after that, we have a six-month program that's less intensive that helps people kind of stay on track and keep, you know, keep themselves accountable. So it's been really fun.
Oh, that's so exciting. And so then, are you finding that because these people have each other to also connect with, that's also supporting their recovery maybe in a different way than if they were kind of dealing with it on their own?
I feel like the group work is the most important part of the program. Not only the, you know, the therapy work in group is important because you see yourself, as you know, you see yourself reflected in other people. And you also get strength from seeing other people be vulnerable and share, you know, the traumas and the issues that they've had coming up. And it gives you a sense that you're not alone. You know, because eating disorders thrive in secret, as you know. And in this way, people see, oh, I have that problem. Oh, she's got the same problem. So it's not just me. I'm not the weirdo.
Yeah. You
know, it's a common thing. And it's really gives you a sense of, security, I think, and acceptance. It's really important. So, but we're fighting against, again, fighting the good fight against the diet industry, because the whole program is not about losing weight. It's about losing weight. It's about really getting to the root cause of, like you were saying, the different layers, how you came to be a binge eater or a compulsive eater or have food addiction. What's the underlying cause and how do we deal with that? And then how do we move forward from there?
Yeah, I think it's that kind of work is so needed, because I think especially to do something like that on your own, like for someone who's listening who might be at that phase where they want help, but they don't really know what to do, or there's a lot of judgment around them from the people around them. I think it's hard to be able to analyze yourself, you know, pull yourself out from where you are to then help yourself. So like having a support circle of people who are going through the same thing, where there isn't that level of judgment, which the people around you often project because they don't know how to deal with what you're going through and they don't know how to support you. So it's never intentional, but I think having a space where you have, you know, medical professionals that can guide you, but then you also see yourself with a group, I feel like it can really probably make that process a lot easier, but also probably expedite it.
Expedite it and deepen it. Because I think the thing I love is the depth that my clients are going too, that they're, you know, dropping deeper and deeper through the program. And they're learning so much about themselves, but it's not just intellectual learning.
Aww.
It's really them feeling, you know, experiencing the reasons why they ended up where they are. And, you know, for people who are living in larger bodies with eating disorders, they also have to fight the vast cultural norms of the thin ideal. It's not mm-hmm. just their families that they're having to stand up against, but, you know, people stop them on the street or stop them when they're with their children and make rude comments. I mean, I've been really shocked at some of the things that strangers have said to people about their weight or their size. Just brutal, brutal.
Wow, that's horrible. My heart is just like, oh, I feel for them.
Yeah. So you can imagine if they're taking that choice of being in a program that's not focused on you got to lose weight, you got to lose weight, you got to lose weight, that people are going to be judging them even more.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid to go to the medical for their medical appointment because they're going to be put on the scale and told, well, I thought you were in a program. Why aren't you losing weight? You know?
Yeah.
And so it's really a process, but it's just such a beautiful transformation that I see when I work with people like that. And I just love the work and I love working with them. And you know, I just have so much, so much, you know, I have to give them props because this work isn't easy. And so for them to put their trust in this program and to really stick with it, it's pretty amazing, you know.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I can see Carolyn at the moment, so I can totally see and feel the love that you have for doing this work and supporting these people. And I have no doubt that they also feel that too, because I think having someone who can support you in such a embracing and warm kind of space, I think that's huge.
Huge for me too.
What's one of the most rewarding things that you're receiving from running this program?
I think seeing people get off the diet treadmill is really rewarding, because again, I know how difficult that is, and seeing their mindset change. You know, I interviewed you for the Trauma, Food, and the Body symposium that we had recently and talked about changing mindset. And it's super hard to change your mindset.
Yeah.
And people actually start to say, you know, I'm realizing that I value other things about myself, not just how I look. I'm a good person. I'm successful in my career. I'm a good wife. I'm a good mother. And why should I invalidate all of that because I'm heavy? That's mind blowing.
Yes. It's interesting that you touch on that, because I was just doing some reading this morning and I just a paragraph from this book I was reading, it was talking about that, how so often we invalidate ourselves as human beings because of this one thing that maybe, you know, is more our darkness, you know, rather than focusing on all the beautiful and light things and embracing the whole, we focus our attention of the lack or the what isn't or the what's not good and all that kind of stuff.
And I think everybody has a challenge that makes them go down that dark path. Mm. For some people it's, you know, their size. For other people it's their, you know, eating behaviors, et cetera. For other people it's depression or anxiety, bipolar and so on. But I think for me, you know, what I learned from my own illness is that illness really is a call to action. Mm-hmm. And it's a call from that deep part of ourselves, that essence of who we are, our authentic part of us, you know. And that authentic part is calling us to come back, you know, come back home and be who you want to be and who you were designed to be. And so that's one of the things I use a lot in my work, is just recognizing that this isn't, you know, any better or worse than having another challenge. It's just the same. It's a call.
And
you can do the call or you can stay in denial.
I love that whole analogy, and I feel exactly the same. I totally agree with you from personal experience for our listeners. I do believe that. And I think we have a choice to see it that way. You know, I think, because like you said, it could be something else. And I remember when I wrote my book, like I said, my path was through an eating disorder, but it could have been something else, you know. And I think for our listeners, you know, it might be something, could be issues with your family. It could be your health. It could be your finances. It could be your career. Like, there are so many things, but I think life is speaking to us and we just have to stop and listen to it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so our conversation is coming to an end, but I want to finish off with three signature questions that I ask my guests. So, okay. Are you ready? If you weren't in this career and you could do it all over again, what would you like to attempt?
That's easy. When I applied to medical school, I also applied to grad school to study business because I wanted to run children's daycare centers.
Oh.
Like Montessori centers. I love working with children.
Yeah.
And I think there aren't enough really great opportunities for children who aren't in school, or even those who are in school, to learn this kind of stuff we're talking about, you know? Yeah. It's all about, it's more like nanny care, you know, just...
Totally.
And so that is easy.
Unfortunately,
I didn't get into grad school. I got into med school instead.
Oh, that's very cool. Pardon? Yeah.
The universe spoke.
It did. And you listened to the call. All right. And is there a piece of wisdom that you've acquired through self-experience or that someone has passed on to you that you live by today?
Oh, that's a deep one.
Mm.
Yeah. I can say, I think for me, the most important thing in my life is always to be honest with myself. And that sounds like an easy thing to do, but I think it can be very difficult when you're facing, you know, when you're facing realizations about maybe things you've done wrong in your life or things that you're ashamed of. My approach has always been to just be honest with myself. And sometimes it takes me a while to get there. But in the end, that's what's always served me.
Mm. I do have to say that I love that about you. And, you know, we've known each other for a few years now. And it's something, I guess, for me that I still practice. And I feel like I continuously fall down over again. And I feel like I'm slowly getting better about being more honest with myself. But seeing you, you know, be that way with yourself, it's inspiring for me as well to rise more into that in myself. Yeah.
Well, I feel lucky that I've been able to be that kind of person. Even hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, like you said.
Sometimes it sucks.
Totally.
To know that you hurt somebody that you loved, or to know that you did something so stupid that, you know, I mean, luckily I haven't killed anybody, but it's still, you know, there have been things that I've done that I'm not proud of, but owning them has always been the best way for me.
Mm. And my final question for you is, what do you feel is your greatest asset?
Well, when I was younger, I would have said my intelligence. I think I've lost a few IQ points over time. You know, I think my biggest, the thing that I think is a gift for me is my ability to relate to other people and to be I don't really struggle putting myself in someone else's shoes, and I can feel their pain. And I've learned over time to be able to feel it and not let it take me over.
Yeah.
Which was a challenge early in my career. But I think being able to feel another person's, you know, struggle really been helpful for me to understand the people I work with and to be able to really and truly help them heal.
I think I have asked that question so many times. What, this is episode 108. I've asked that question so many times, and I have to say that is the most beautiful and I think my favorite answer I've ever heard.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and I really mean that. Like, I really felt it. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for talking to me today. And for our listeners, I will include all the links in the show notes so you can go and check out the program if it feels right for you, or maybe you know a loved one or someone who could benefit from the Anchor program. Thank you again, Carolyn.
Thank you, Monica.